listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. Postal workers are back on strike following proposed changes to Canada Post from the federal government. These changes include an end to daily mail delivery requirements, which would see residents that receive door-to-door delivery converted to community mailbox systems. The union says these moves threaten postal workers' jobs and take them out of the communities they are part of. It also says they are concerned that these moves are a red flag signaling privatization. CJLO visited one postal worker picket line at a Canada Post center in Montreal's garment district. Here is striking letter carrier Augusta Vino.
It's been kind of like a rough time because like it's called restructuring. The government has recently gotten involved, so we've been on and off striking with like work to rule sort of movements, and like you've heard we haven't been doing flyers, we haven't been delivering overtime, that sort of thing. But this time we kind of went into emergency strike mode because the government decided to put their mitts on the issue.
The restructuring of Canada Post has seen workers off foot routes and into trucks. Now, with the introduction of what are called dynamic routes, workers say things could become more inconsistent.
We are very adaptable. We do change. Things have changed a lot in the last 6 months, even with the restructure. And it's been fine. We've all adapted. But the thing with doing a different thing every single day, it's not like one change. It's every single day. And we are at the beck and call of the supervisors. We have less autonomy on the job, which would change our quality of life.
Union representative Guillaume Bredard was also present at the picket line. He said a major sticking point for the union was salaries not keeping up with inflation.
We want to save a business model that we can have enough money just to raise a family. We don't want to be like Intelcom, Dragonfly, and the rest of Canada that they have to work 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, just to have enough to raise a family. That's not the model the federal government should impose to an industry. We're not blind. We know there's a lot of changes in the postal industry, but we can't do it against the workers and their family. We can find a solution together.
The union has expressed concerns over the potential privatization of Canada Post. Joel Lightbound, the Minister of Government Transformation, Public Works and Procurement, denied that claim in a public statement where he wrote, quote, "Canada Post must remain a public service," unquote. Lightbound defended the government's proposed changes, writing in that same statement that they could save Canada Post upwards $420 million annually. The strike shows no clear end. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Love. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Man, what a week we had. What a week in the world of sports. We will get into all of it here over the next hour on the Tommy John Show. If you're new to the program, remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. And what's great about this episode today and for the following episodes is we got another pro sport to talk about. The NHL starts this week. We got big contract news, big news all over the place in the NHL. So we'll finally add that to the mix to go along with college football, to go along with the NFL, to go along with Major League Baseball's postseason. Not to mention the NBA comes back in a few weeks' time. We are in full swing in sports mode. Full swing. And I am so happy. We will start the show just talking about the breaking news that happened moments ago. Connor McDavid signing a two-year, $25 million extension with the Oilers. Listen, $12.5 million a year for Connor McDavid is essentially what he's making now. Maybe $500,000 more per year than what he's making now. It's a bargain for Edmonton. But this contract, a two-year deal, is basically giving the Oilers 2 years to go win a cup. Because if they get it done, then sure, maybe McDavid signs a long-term deal for a long time, gets whatever. If Kaprizov got $17 million a year with the cap going up even more in 2 years, he could be $22, $23 million a year. But it's also giving the Oilers 2 years to go all in, try and win a cup to make him stay. Because if they don't win in those 2 years, I could easily see McDavid being gone. They got, I guess, 3 years, right? Because he's under contract this year. He's got two more years after that. They've got 3 years to make McDavid happy. And 3 years to prove that they are the organization he should spend the rest of his career with. They locked up Draisaitl. Bouchard's on a bigger deal now. Darnell Nurse is locked up. They just went and got that Ingram kid, the goalie from Utah, to try and help them out. They have to do it. Because McDavid has been crystal clear from the get-go. He wants to win a cup in Edmonton. But if he gets to, age 29, 30, and they haven't gotten it done, and he's the greatest player of all time not to win a Stanley Cup, then he might look elsewhere in 3 years' time. That is absolutely a possibility. So what this does, it gives, obviously, the Oilers now 3 years to build up a better roster. I mean, they're in the last two Stanley Cup finals. Not like they're a bad roster, but get some more depth. Maybe get a better goaltending and defensive pieces. 3 years to make McDavid stay an Oiler for life. That's what it is. Because if they don't do anything, if they go to a Western Conference Finals a couple times, first round exit, losing a cup final again, and they don't win in these next 3 years, I can absolutely see McDavid signing elsewhere when his next contract's up. But 2 years, $25 million extension for McDavid, and I'm surprised it's that low of a number. I get it that they want other pieces. He probably wants them to go and have financial flexibility because he makes millions off the ice. But he's not making much as Draisaitl. He's only making $2 million a year more than Evan Bouchard. He took a very team-friendly deal. So there's no excuses for the Oilers. McDavid at 12.5 for the next 2 years. Well, 12 this year, 12.5 for the next two after that. When you have Kaprizov making 17, you have a guy on his team, Leon Draisaitl, who's fantastic, but making 14. You have MacKinnon and Matthews making more. He took a very team-friendly deal for the next 2 years after this one. So this is it for Edmonton. If they don't win now, then I don't think they ever will for a long, long time. McDavid, 2 years, $25 million extension, will be an Oiler for the next 3 years is the big headline from this morning. Had to get that in there to start the show. We'll quickly go through the NFL. And it was a crazy weekend, week number five. Upsets all over the place. We have no more undefeated teams as the Eagles fell to Denver. The Patriots went into Buffalo, knocked off the Bills. There are no more undefeated teams. And I can't remember the last time this happened. Like week five, that's it? No more? Usually you have one team that gets the 6-7-0. Week five, all of them done. The best anyone got was 4-0, which is crazy. We will break down both those games later on the show. We'll just recap week five. We had Mac Jones playing on basically one leg going into L.A., taking down the Rams 26-23 on Thursday night. McCaffrey had a big game, a huge performance by Kendrick Bourne, who New England kicked to the curb, didn't want anything to do with. He got 10 balls for 142 yards. He was insane. Then they had this Jake Tongas kid who played well. The 49ers are depleted. No George Kittle. Obviously, Purdy's out. Ayuk hasn't returned yet. Juwan Jennings has been banged up. There's not much there. Bosa's out for the year. The 49ers have just been crushed with injuries, and they're 4-1, leading the NFC West. And we talked about this to start the year. The 49ers' schedule is a joke. It's awful. They have a tough game this week at Tampa Bay, but then you get the Giants, the Panthers, the Cardinals, the Browns, the Titans, the Bears. This is a double-digit win football team. With or without Brock Purdy. Mac Jones played great with one leg. This Shanahan system with McCaffrey healthy. They're a double-digit win team. And Robert Saleh back as a defensive coordinator. He's doing a great job there. I do question Sean McVay's play call 4th-and-1. I didn't mind him going for it in overtime. Go for the win. But I feel like he's done that a lot. 4th-and-short. 3rd-and-short. Just like run up the middle. For a guy who's so creative and so innovative as an offensive play caller and play designer to just run the ball up the middle with Kyron Williams when every 49ers player is in the box ready to stop the run is a bit strange for me. But I'm not selling my Rams stock at all. Matt Stafford's still playing great at this age. They got two great wide receivers in Adams and Nacua. They got a young, hungry defense. I'm not selling the Rams stock. I think they're very dangerous. But the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan seem to always have success against Sean McVay and the Rams. So I'm not freaking out too much as a Rams fan. But you got to give the Niners credit. Banged up. Depleted, not much there. And they are 4-1. And Mac Jones, 3-0. As the starter for the San Francisco 49ers. I know it's funny, too. There was reports when they traded up to get Trey Lance in the 2021 draft. They were trading up for Mac Jones originally. Then they saw the Trey Lance tape, fell in love with Trey Lance. And we all know how that situation ended. But they end up getting Mac Jones a few years later as a backup. And now with Purdy being injured, who knows how long he'll be out for. Having Mac Jones there, there's not much of a drop-off, which is great to see. In a very strange football game, the Minnesota Vikings improved to 3-2 with a 21-17 win over the Cleveland Browns. Carson Wentz played pretty well. Jordan Mason had himself a nice game. Justin Jefferson had a monster day with 123 yards receiving. Jordan Addison, his addition to the offense, is helping out. The Vikings are just trying to stay afloat until J.J. McCarthy comes back. We still don't know what kind of a quarterback he will be, but he was the guy and the reason why Sam Darnold went to Seattle, because they had all their faith put into J.J. McCarthy, and he's been out, and Carson Wentz has done a serviceable job. Played well against Cincinnati that first game, and then it was a tough spot for them in Ireland last week, in London this week. They split it 1-1. I'd say that's a successful trip for the Minnesota Vikings. Dylan Gabriel made his first ever NFL start, and he was pretty good. 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, only 190 yards passing. But he got a lot of help from this Quinshon Judkins kid from Ohio State. He's made a huge impact on the offense. They scored 17 points, but for the Browns, it's pretty good. But they're not going anywhere. I feel bad because that defense is special. But to lose games just constantly when your defense is playing that well is a bummer. And eventually that defense might start quitting on the offense. It's hard to go out every single week, play your tails off, stop all these offenses to have your offense go 3-and-out all the time. It's so demoralizing. It's brutal. But the Vikings, in a tough division, improved to 3-2. Dak Prescott might be the MVP of the league the way he's playing right now. I know it's against the Jets, but he's been remarkable this year. He had 4 touchdown passes, and what's helping him out a lot is the resurgence of Javonte Williams. We all remember him in Denver, very capable back. Finally gets another chance in Dallas, and he's taking full advantage. He had 135 yards on the ground, averaging over 8 yards a carry. My goodness, he's having a phenomenal, phenomenal year. Not to mention he caught a touchdown pass as well. What a performance by the Cowboys. Now, if you look at the New York Jets, this is getting very ugly. The only winless team left in the NFL. And I understand Aaron Glenn is here for the long run. This is not just a coach who's immediately going to turn around. It's going to take some time. But this is not a great way to start your regime. 0-5. And I was stunned to hear, I think he's the first Jet coach to start 0-5. How is that even possible? Or is his first year to start 0-5? I know Adam Gase has been 0-5 with the Jets and a bunch of other guys like that. But his first year to start off 0-5, I think he might be the first Jet quarterback ever to do so. Which I don't even know how that's possible considering how bad the Jets have been over the last few years. Just an appalling performance. And listen, it's going to take time. What I'm surprised is how awful that defense has been. They have not had a turnover. They haven't forced a turnover this year. And Aaron Glenn is supposed to be the defensive-minded guy, the guru. He has a bunch of talent on that defense, a few Pro Bowlers back there. And that defense has been awful. They got torched by Aaron Rodgers in week 1. Now Dak Prescott comes into town, torches them. Miami moved the ball up and down the field on them. Tampa Bay did as well. Buffalo, they can't get a stop. And then next week they have to go all the way to London to take on the Denver Broncos, who got a big win in Philadelphia. So let's see what happens with the Jets, but not a promising start to the Aaron Glenn era. Maybe the biggest surprise of the week was the New Orleans Saints getting a win. And I know they played the Giants, Jackson Dart fever. They beat the Chargers last weekend. Everyone buying into the Giants. To have a performance like that was appalling. Jackson Dart was horrendous in the football game. He threw the ball 40 times, only had 200 yards passing, 2 picks. I know it's a work in progress, and they're trying to get him caught up. But man, he was bad yesterday. A few bad picks. I know one was on 4th down. He had to throw the ball anyway. But I was not impressed at all. And if you're Brian Daboll, this experiment has to work. It has to work. If Jackson Dart stinks up the joint the rest of the year, him and Shane are out. They're done. And it's at a point now where the Mara family is just tired of being mediocre and tired of being crap. They're done. They've given Brian Daboll every single opportunity to turn this franchise around. And they had the one good year to start, which he's still holding on to, that he turned Daniel Jones into a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, won a playoff game. But look what Daniel Jones is doing in Indianapolis. So again, it's a very interesting spot. I'm not writing the kid off yet, Jackson Dart, to his second career start. But when you're playing a team like New Orleans, you got to think you're going to win that ball game, man. Give the Saints credit. They hung in there, took the lead in the second half, and they did not look back. They get the first win ever for Kellen Moore as a head coach. The New Orleans Saints will go to New England next week, I believe, to take on the Patriots. The Colts, what a win. What a win by Indianapolis. They hammered the Raiders 40-6, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Geno Smith might get benched. And the reason I say I can't believe I'm saying this because Geno Smith was brought in to bring some stability to the quarterback room in Las Vegas. They were tired of the Aiden O'Connells, tired of the Desmond Ridders, tired of all these guys who are not NFL caliber quarterbacks. Gardner Minshew, they're not starting quarterbacks in the NFL. They're all backups. They're just throwing them out there, seeing if anyone could just play the QB position at a competent level. So what do? They bring in Pete Carroll, stable Super Bowl winning head coach, bring in Geno Smith, who's been a Pro Bowler, 4,000-yard passer several times in his career in Seattle. They thought they were just bringing stability, and he has been the opposite. He's a turnover machine, can't do anything. I know Brock Bowers was out, but you got the kid Genty from Boise State who's starting to pick it up a bit. Trey Tucker's a nice wide receiver as well. Jacoby Myers is good. They have some talent on this football team, and for Geno Smith to not score a touchdown, lead a touchdown drive and throw two more interceptions to make him lead the league in turnovers is crazy. They finally had stability, I thought. I'm not saying the Raiders are going to make the playoffs, but I thought, okay, they'll get competent quarterback play. And Geno Smith has been a bottom three QB this entire season. Through the first 5 weeks, he has been horrendous. And I think horrendous would be putting it lightly. So we'll see what happens. Pete Carroll loves Geno Smith, had him in Seattle, chose to play him and trade Russell Wilson all those years ago. Let's see. But if Geno Smith continues to play like this, they're going to be in serious, serious trouble. And there's no excuses next week as they're home against the Titans. If Geno Smith stinks up the joint again, would not be surprised if they bench him in favor of whoever the backup is in Las Vegas. The Panthers get another win, 27-24 over the Miami Dolphins. It's not pretty, but Bryce Young played a bit better. What they needed was a big game from a running back, and they got it. Rico Dowdle went insane, 206 yards on the ground with a touchdown, averaging 9 yards a carry. Tet McMillan, the top 10 pick from Arizona, he's blossoming into a star. Xavier Leggett caught a touchdown, so they got a bunch of talent on that offense, a lot of high draft picks, and they showed up yesterday to give the Panthers the victory. The Houston Texans beat up on the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens are 1-4. And I understand that half of their team's out with injuries, especially on that defense. No Roquan Smith, no Humphrey, no Kyle Hamilton. It's a lot. And then Lamar Jackson's not playing, and it's Cooper Rush. It was a disaster. And that defense is so bad, it's crazy. And I understand all the injuries I just mentioned, but week one, they gave up 41. Against the Lions on Monday night, they gave up 38. Last weekend against the Chiefs, they gave up 37. This week, they gave up 44 to the Texans, who are one of the worst offenses in football for the first 4 weeks of the year. C.J. Stroud looked like the rookie C.J. Stroud. He threw for 4 touchdown passes. Nick Chubb looks like he got in a time machine and went back to 2021 Nick Chubb. It was a disaster, disaster, disaster in Baltimore. It's disastrous. Horrible performance by the Ravens, 1-4, and I know Lamar Jackson's great and all, but I think even him in 2 weeks' time can't save this team. What are they going to be, 1-5, 1-6? They got the Rams, then the Bears, and then you still got to play Pittsburgh twice. You got to play the Packers. It's not an easy schedule. So let's see. I think they just got to win a game or two down, just get to 2-4. Get to 3-5 for when Lamar Jackson comes back. But it doesn't matter because he doesn't play defense. And Zach Gordon, this defense has been appalling. Horrible performance. And I don't care that there's a bunch of injuries. I understand that. Injuries is a part of football. Ask the Bengals. They lost their quarterback. They can't function. It's part of the game. But for the Ravens who just love to say how great their franchise is, love to say how deep they are as a franchise, love to live and go back on the history of the Ray Lewis and the 2000 Ravens, Ed Reed, Terrell Suggs. They love to think they're a defensive ball club. To play like that is appalling. 44-10, you got to be kidding me. The Broncos went into Philadelphia and came back on the Eagles. And I got to tell you, it's a very strange situation what's going on in Philadelphia because they were humming 4-0. They were winning ugly. Not to mention they won the Super Bowl last year. But to have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith get angry because they're not getting their touches, you're 4-0. You won the Super Bowl last year. Just relax. It's working. Would you rather get your numbers or not? You got your Super Bowl ring. You want to put up your numbers. Would you rather win or get your numbers? And I feel like they started to force the ball more in the pass game, went away from the run, and it cost them. Who cares, A.J. Brown? Who cares, Devontae Smith? We all know you're great wide receivers, hence why you're on the contracts that you're on, hence why you were drafted where you were drafted, hence why the Eagles gave up all that draft capital to get A.J. Brown. We all know how great these guys are. But then they'll be bent out of shape because they're not getting their targets. You won the Super Bowl last year. You're 4-0 to start the year. Who cares? It's not like they're playing for a contract. They've gotten paid. They've gotten raises for crying out loud. You got your money. You got a Super Bowl. You're 4-0 to start the year. Why are you yapping? Oh, I'm not getting the ball. I want my target. Oh, stop. Ask Ja'Marr Chase how he feels. Playing with Jake Browning. Oh, he had a big game stat-wise. He was still ticked off. He had 6 for 110 and 2 touchdowns, and he looked ticked off because they lost again. Seen Justin Jefferson in the past be ticked off because they lost. Ja'Marr Chase last year, and I don't know how many times against the Ravens, he went off for like 200-something yards, and they would lose. And he wasn't smiling. He was ticked off because they lost. These guys, it's the opposite. They're winning games all the damn time, and they're still not happy. Ridiculous. And it cost the Eagles. They went way too pass happy. Jalen Hurts should not, I repeat, should not be throwing the ball 38 times. That should not happen. Saquon Barkley had 6 carries. A.J. Dillon had 2 carries. Oh, Devontae Smith got 8 for 114. You lost. It's not smart. I don't care if you have Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, Otto Graham. Who cares? If you throw the ball 38 times, that's not a good recipe for success. You need to establish some sort of a run game to either bleed the clock or get the defense guessing. If you're just dropping back and passing every damn time, the defense is going to have a good idea on how to defend you. So the Eagles receivers talked. It wasn't good enough. No, no, no. I want my targets. Okay, you want your targets? Here you go. And we lose. Or you can just sit there, enjoy winning every week, getting your Super Bowl rings, not to mention you're getting paid over $30 million a year, and you can be happy. And I understand you might get frustrated, oh, I'm not part of the offense. But them being on the field and being a decoy for defenses is not the worst thing in the world either for the Eagles. Crazy. And Eagles fans are so annoying. They're booing the heck out of the Eagles. They won like 17 games in a row when Jalen Hurts was a starter. Start and finish the game. They won the Super Bowl last year. They're 4-1, and the Eagles fans are booing. Oh, they're so obnoxious. Ridiculous. They win 2 Super Bowls in the last 6 years, and they think they're something now. You're a great football team. You have one of the greatest rosters the NFL's ever seen, top to bottom, and they lose a game, and the fans are booing. Like they think they should win every single week. Oh, my God, ridiculous. Boo, boo. Stop. Are they not allowed 1 week where they can't win? Ridiculous. Since when are the Eagles fans spoiled and obnoxious? Not a good weekend if you're a Pennsylvania sports fan, with Penn State sticking up the joint out UCLA, having the Phillies lose to the Dodgers as a big favorite, not to mention the Eagles lose. It was a rough week for you, fellow Philadelphia fans. So let's take it out on the Super Bowl champions, who were 4-0 before this week. Ridiculous. But still, give Denver credit. Their defense played excellent. Bo Nix was horrendous to start, played much better down the stretch. That's a big win for Denver. The difference between 3-2 and 2-3 with a win over the Super Bowl champions, the reigning defending Super Bowl champions, that can do a lot of things for the Denver Broncos. And for where they were a few weeks ago, being way back of the Chargers because of the head-to-head, because of the Chargers' record in the division, they were already behind the eight ball. But the Chargers have stumbled a little bit. Their offensive line is a mess with all those injuries. And right now, the Broncos are right there in the AFC West just 2 weeks later. It's pretty crazy. Big win by Denver. And if you're the Eagles, hopefully they use the run game more. Having Jalen Hurts throw the ball 38 times is insane. The Titans and Cardinals, that was a ridiculous football game. Arizona's done. I don't know how they recover from that. They had the game won. It was 21-3, 21-6. Then they have the touchdown, and I forget the kid's name who rushed it. DeMarcado, whatever his name is, Amari DeMarcado. Just inexcusable to do what he did. It was A.D. Mitchell last weekend. Why do these guys just hold onto the ball till they're in the end zone, then do your celebration? He drops the ball early to celebrate. It ended up he did not break the plane. The Titans would get to keep the ball, and the Titans went down, scored, not to mention the interception that the Cardinals had. Then they fumbled it into the end zone. The Titans recovered. Then Cam Ward goes right down the field at the end to beat you. I think the Cardinals are done. That was a brutal loss and inexcusable. Inexcusable. The Titans stink. And during that game when it was 21-6, I'm thinking, my God, Callahan might be fired. He might not be let on the plane back home. And they somehow go in and win that football game in one of the biggest choke jobs I've ever seen. And I'm not a Kyler Murray fan. I'm not a Jonathan Gannon fan. To me, that division, they are by far the worst team in that division. The Rams are better than them. The Seahawks went into Arizona a week ago and beat them. And the 49ers are 4-1. So I would be stunned if Arizona recovers from that. It's similar to the Bears last year. They got off to a good start. Then the Jaden Daniels Hail Mary and went off the rails after that. I could easily see the same thing happening in Arizona because that was a horrendous loss. Horrendous. The Lions, they just keep winning football games. The Bengals are done without Burrow. Jake Browning has been awful. I can't believe it, though, because 2 years ago when Burrow got hurt, he came in, had a good run, had his girlfriend in the suite wearing the white jumpsuit. He threw three more picks yesterday as the Lions improved to 4-1. And give Detroit credit. They got their doors blown off week one in Green Bay. All the national media saying, oh, without their coordinators, they're not the same team, Dan Campbell, huh? And what they've done is just annihilated teams since. Annihilated the Bengals. I know the Browns stink. They annihilated them. They went into Baltimore and beat a healthy Baltimore Ravens team. They put 50 on the Bears. The Lions are back. The Lions are back, and they are 4-1, and they're going to be a very tough team to beat, and that offense is humming. The Commanders get a big win in L.A. over the Chargers. Without Joe Alt, that line has completely fallen apart. Okay, losing Rashawn Slater is one thing, and then they move Joe Alt over, and it's fine. To lose Joe Alt as well, Justin Herbert just has no time to do anything. It's really bad. And, okay, they're trying to get this Hampton kid going from North Carolina. He's a good running back. It's going to take some time, but that is a bad loss for the Chargers, who've now dropped two in a row. Jaden Daniels came back, played a clean game. That Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt had a great game, the rookie running back. So the Commanders are 3-2. Jaden Daniels is back. They're a threat in the NFC. And if you're the Chargers, you're just counting down the days until Joe Alt's back at left tackle for them. Buccaneers and Seahawks. And let's take a moment to shout out both of those quarterbacks who were left for dead by several NFL franchises. The Jets, the Panthers, the Vikings, the 49ers for a second. They said, "Nah, Sam Darnold, you can go. We don't need you." And he has really played well in Seattle. He threw for 341 and four touchdowns yesterday, was 28 of 34, was excellent. And on the interception at the end of the game, it hit off a player's helmet. What can you do? That happens. Baker Mayfield, left for dead from the Browns. The Panthers had him lining up as a defensive player on scout team. Sean McVay picks him up, dusts him off, teaches him offense a bit. But because of Matt Stafford, they let him walk in free agency, goes to Tampa Bay, and now Baker Mayfield looks like the MVP of the league. And it just shows you, it's all about where you go and who coaches you. Situation matters. Look at the Jets. They had Sam Darnold, appalling. We want the new flashy toy. We want Zach Wilson. Disaster. Aaron Rodgers going to the Hall of Fame when he played there, disaster. Justin Fields, disaster. Sam Darnold, okay, you go to Carolina. That's a horrible situation. What does he do? He goes to a good situation in San Francisco, learns a bit from Kyle Shanahan, stays in the same offense because Kevin O'Connell runs the same offense, has an MVP caliber year. MVP caliber. He looked bad the last two games of the year. We took this kid McCarthy. Sorry, Sam. And he goes to Seattle, and he's looking like a top 10 quarterback. Similar offense, but he's looking like a top 10 quarterback in football. The talent's there. We all know these kids can play coming out of college. It's just where they go and who they end up with. Baker Mayfield, just an absolute gamer, goes to the Browns, led the Browns to the postseason, which never happens. They want the flashier toy in Deshaun Watson. He goes to a horrible situation in Carolina with Sam Darnold. They don't even take him seriously enough. They give him another chance. They kick him to the curb. Sean McVay picks him up, dusts him off, goes to Tampa Bay. Here we go. Top 10 quarterback, maybe even top 5 quarterback in football. He's had 4 game-winning drives this year. 4. Give Baker Mayfield a lot of credit. And give Sam Darnold a lot of credit. That game was incredible. Both quarterbacks played amazing. And Seattle, even though they lost that game, they're looking at this as a positive. Because they got a guy in Sam Darnold. And they got a guy who they won't let go. They're not going to let Sam Darnold go. They gave him the contract. Maybe he opts out and tries to get more money. But he got generational money. They took a chance on him. Kicked Geno Smith to the curb. The amount of people I heard, oh, Geno Smith's way better than Sam Darnold. No, he's not. I like Geno Smith, and I liked him in Seattle, but he could not do what Sam Darnold was doing in Minnesota last year. He couldn't. And he's an underrated athlete. He can move. Sam Darnold's a guy. He's officially a guy in the NFL. And Baker Mayfield, right now, if you have to ask me my 3 MVPs, Baker Mayfield, Dak, and Josh Allen, maybe. Justin Herbert, I still think, could get there, but that offensive line has completely let him down. But right now, if I had to give out the MVP of the league, I'm giving it to Baker Mayfield. Tampa Bay is 4-1, 4 game-winning drives by Baker Mayfield. And Evans has been in and out of the lineup. He's using this Abuka kid who's absolutely incredible. 7 catches, 163 yards. But he's using Tez Johnson. Godwin, I don't think, is fully healthy. Bucky Irving wasn't even there, and they still put up almost 40 points on a very good Seattle defense on the road. Right now, my MVP of the league would be Baker Mayfield. He's playing incredible. And then lastly, we get to my Patriots. And I saved this one for last because I'm very happy today. And I remember being live in this studio, on this very program, talking to you guys when they hired Mike Vrabel. And I remember saying, I don't know if we're going to be a playoff team. I doubt it. But all I know is that Mike Vrabel will bring winning football back to New England. I don't know how long it will take, but he'll play winning football. And then before the winning even happens, he will bring competent and hard-nosed football back immediately. I knew from the get-go, Vrabel there, we might not be the most talented, we might not win a bunch of games, but we're going to fight. And we're going to play hard, and we're going to hit. And we're going to look like an NFL team for once. They've exceeded my expectations. I knew they'd be good, and if you look at these Patriots, the schedule stinks coming up, and they should be 4-1. They were awful week one against the Raiders, but I knew that was, I had a bad feeling about that game. Pete Carroll and Geno Smith, they have a good relationship. Week one was their best chance to win a football game. They did that. New England, new offensive caller for Drake May, just trying to get everything under control. It's a lot. So they lose that game. They should have beat the Steelers by 40. But if Ramondre Stevenson can hold on to a football, and if Antonio Gibson can hold on to a football, if they don't turn the ball over 5 times, they win that game. But okay. They don't. They lose. And how do they respond? They blow out the Panthers, and then they go into Buffalo against the Super Bowl favorites, against the reigning MVP on Sunday Night Football, and win the game. And what I took away from last night is, not only is Drake May a guy, Stephon Diggs is a gamer. And yes, he's had his moments where he's been up, down, all over the place. I remember a few years ago in Buffalo, he dropped that key pass in the Chiefs game. Fair. But when he's on and when he's motivated and when he has something to prove, he is an elite wide receiver still at this age. Last night, he was all over the place. That was personal for him. The Bills kicked him to the curb 2 years ago. In my opinion, rightfully so. Josh Allen was fine at that point. He was becoming a bit of a distraction. I didn't hate that they got rid of him, freed up some money. But for Stephon Diggs yesterday, that was personal. And you could see it. He was running with authority. He's on the sideline constantly talking to his teammates, saying, lock in, let's go. He was a big difference in that football game. And Mike Vrabel, listen, that defense played outstanding. Now, there's still some things to clean up. They have too many dumb penalties. Like that one drive where the Bills got a field goal, that was all because of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on the Patriots, like the roughing the passers, the unsportsmanlike conduct. What was it? The one on James Cook was brutal by Farmer. There's still a lot, one too many of those. And there's still the awful, awful offensive false starts. That Vidarian Lowe one, who should be cut today, third and an inch, and he false starts. The one thing you can't do in that scenario, and the Patriots were forced to punt. Outside of that, that is a flawless football game by the Patriots. And Drake May in the second half looked like the best quarterback in football. He was 13 of 14, 186 yards in the second half, had a perfect passer rating. He was sensational. And you got to give Josh McDaniels a ton of credit. This was a player in Drake May who everyone liked and knew he had the goods. But it was just that, can New England surround him with quality players, a decent offensive line, and good play calling? And can he develop into a guy? And you can see how much better he has gotten just in the last 5 weeks. Compared to last year, it's night and day. Got off to a rocky start week one against the Raiders. Know what they did? They looked at the tape. We'll get the run game going. Responded well against the Dolphins. Played pretty well against the Steelers. Played his best game as a pro last week against the Panthers. And he continued it here at Buffalo in a tricky spot. Drake May seems to be the guy. The offensive line looks much better. Stephon Diggs looks like he still has a lot left in the tank. And this is a team, like I said, since March, plays tough. Are they a playoff team? I don't know. There's a lot of winnable games on that schedule. But I will know that the Patriots are back to being a steady organization. That's a big win for New England. And if you're Buffalo, listen, you're 4-1, still leading the way in the division, and I think this might help them in the long run. Last weekend against New Orleans, they got exposed a little bit. I think if the Bills want to make a run to the Super Bowl this year, they need some losses like this to teach them some lessons. Trust me, it's better to lose games week 5 than lose a game like this in the wild card round or the divisional round. So I'm not selling my Buffalo stock. Josh Allen's the best quarterback in football right now. That defense, though, they need to play better. And hopefully when those rookies get healthy, they'll make a big, big difference for them. And then tonight we got Chiefs and Jaguars, which should be a fun game. Can't wait to watch that one. So the Jags are 3-1, looking to make a statement. The Chiefs looked much better the last few weeks, albeit, though, against an injury-depleted Ravens team and the Giants. So tonight will be a good test to see where both of these teams are at. Can't wait for that. So that's our quick little NFL recap for week number 5. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a bit about college football. Penn State, which I told everyone, frauds. They go and lose to a team that hadn't led all year long in UCLA. We'll get into that. We'll also get into Arch Manning and the Longhorns stinking up the joint in Florida. Then we have to talk about the Montreal Canadiens. It is officially go time this week. They start their 2025-2026 campaign. What to expect, which players are going to be exciting. We'll get into all of it here on the next 15 minutes of the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hey, this is Honey Drip inviting you to Morph Sound System's daytime fundraiser on October 11th at Parquet. Morph is a new collective in Montreal dedicated to empowering women and queer individuals in the creative and technical realms of sound system building. Our fundraiser brings together DJ sets, live performances, panels, workshops, and local vendors. Follow us on Instagram at Morph Sounds for more details and join us October 11th. Be a part of the sound system.
Are you looking for an alternative to FM radio playlists? Then tune in to the World Beat News radio program right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. to hear brand new World Beat music from mainly Canadian artists. Call or text at 848-7471. Some say bureaucrats and education is...
Back here in the Tommy John Show. We have to talk about Major League Baseball. What a weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays. Not only are they up 2-0 in a series and just need to win one more game to get to the ALCS, they did so by scoring 10 runs on Saturday and 13 runs on Sunday. Let me say that again. 10 runs on Saturday, 13 runs on Sunday. And you got to give them credit. They did not just play any old pitcher yesterday. They took out Max Fried, who's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, a proven winner, and they absolutely killed him yesterday. This is Max Fried. This is a World Series champion. This is an all-star. This is a guy who led the major league in wins. And his stat line was 3 innings pitched, 8 hits, 7 earned runs, and only 1 strikeout. My goodness. What a statement. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. looks like the greatest player to ever play baseball. He looks like Barry Bonds out there. Then you have Dalton Varsho looking insane, hitting 2 home runs. Ernie Clement, George Springer. And if they get through this series, hopefully Bo Bichette can come back and be added to this lineup. Because if you add a 300-something hitter in Bo Bichette to play short, this is a very, very good lineup. And this Trey Yesavage kid, my goodness, what a performance from him. 11 strikeouts. Now, if there's one thing I would say from a Toronto Blue Jays perspective that worries me is John Schneider in big spots. Because he only let Yesavage pitch 5 1/3 innings. And then he goes to all these young guys afterwards. And they were giving up runs like it was going out of style. Eric Lauer was giving up runs. Tommy Nance gave up a few runs. What was his name? Justin Brule, whatever his name is. Number 58. He was giving up runs. So it was a bit dicey there. You know, they were kicking the crap out of them. And then they just let the Yankees score 7 runs in the 6th and 7th inning. You'd like them to clean that up. Like, if you have a guy pitching like that, just let him stay in the game and keep that bullpen rested. Nope, not what he does. Puts in the young guys for playoff experience, and they let that one get a bit closer than it should have. Still a 6-run win, but I'm still worried about John Schneider in big spots. I remember 2 years ago pulling Jose Berrios in Minnesota. That was a disaster. He was pitching amazing. They pull him, the bullpen loses the game for him, and that ended the Blue Jays' year. He's done that a few times. So if there's one thing I worried about is John Schneider, analytics. But the roster's good enough to go to the World Series. Absolutely good enough. We'll go around the rest of Major League Baseball. The Brewers hammered the Cubs in Game 1. They still hold a 1-0 lead. The Dodgers went into Philadelphia and took Game 1 from the Phillies. They scored 3 runs in the top of the 7th to take the lead, and they did not hold back. A big performance from Teoscar Hernandez, who seems to live for the postseason. He was tremendous last year for the Dodgers. He's continuing that run as well this year. If you're the Phillies, though, you are very worried. Because if you go down 0-2 and you have to go to L.A. for 2, my goodness. And if the Dodgers, okay, they're the 3 seed in the NL, but they were kind of just waiting, going through the motions in the regular season. All their big guys were getting healthy at the end of the year, and they were red hot going into the postseason. They destroy the Cincinnati Reds, and they take Game 1 from the Phillies. No one wants to play the L.A. Dodgers right now. Game 2 is tonight at 6:08 p.m. Can't wait for that one. The Tigers took Game 1 and That was a big surprise. They had Scooble on the mound yesterday for game two. He pitched well, 7 innings, only 2 earned runs, but the Mariners get the job done. That series is 1-1 as we head for game three in Detroit. The other big one we have to discuss, we really need to discuss, is that wild card round and my Red Sox. Good year, great year. But the Yankees celebrating like they won the World Series by beating us in the wild card round was a disaster. Was not a good look. They're popping the champagne. Woo, we beat the most injury-depleted Red Sox team of all time, and it took 3 games to do so. Now you're seeing what happens. And I'm not writing the Yankees off. I'm not saying it's over. But they didn't just get beat on the weekend. They got destroyed, dismantled, annihilated. And they were saying yesterday this is the first time the Yankees have given up double digits in back-to-back playoff games ever. What? And for the Blue Jays to knock Max Fried out, and now the Yankees are forced to go to the rest of their rotation for the rest of the series, that is a very promising sign. So a lot of pressure in New York. 3 days ago, it was all great things in New York. They're playing New York, New York, Frank Sinatra. Everything's great in the Bronx. To 3 days later, getting their doors blown off twice, and their season now of on the line. Let's see if they're popping champagne after winning game three. Let's see if they can do that. Crazy. And know who's going to get a lot of heat if they lose? This is Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone, the Yankees fan. I've never seen a fan base hate a manager or a coach more than the Yankees fans hating Aaron Boone. He is that hated in New York. Even when the team wins, they make the playoffs every year. I get it. They have Aaron Judge. They have Stanton. They have Bellinger. They have a quality lineup. Max Fried is a pitcher. Usually Gerrit Cole as well. So you should make the playoffs. And the Yankees, they have higher standards. But I've never seen a manager get more hate than Aaron Boone. And if they lose in three to the Blue Jays in the ALDS, there will be calls for him to be fired. And especially with Bruce Bochy out there now, he's not going back to Texas. He's a proven World Series winning manager with the Giants, with the Texas Rangers 2 years ago. If the Yankees can go get him, trust me, New York callers are going to be just praying the Yankees go out there and get him. But Aaron Boone, the Yankees love him. Steinbrenner loves him. The GM there, Fred Cashman, loves him. So I don't think he goes anywhere. But if they lose in three to the Blue Jays, there's going to be calls for his job. There really will be. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Penn State stinking up the joint, Arch Manning stinking up the joint, and what to expect for the Canadians in 2025-2026. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hey, do you love movies? Discover the best of art house cinema in 3 theaters all across the city. That is Cinéma Musée, Du Parc, and Beaubien. Students only pay $11 per ticket, all day, every day. See you at the movies.
I once had a dream that I was eating a peanut butter and tuna fish sandwich. And let me tell you something, it was delicious. So the next day, I decided to make that sandwich. And in real life, it is disgusting. It is a disgusting sandwich. And the reason I tell you this story, pick up the phone, just.
Hi, this is Dreamscapes, and we want to eat that disgusting sandwich because we're a show about dreams, and we don't think that dream sandwich is disgusting at all. So, you should be calling us to tell us about your dreams and your dream sandwiches. And if you do want to call in, the number is 514-848-7471. And we're on CJLO Mondays at 4 p.m. And we don't think your dream is weird at all. It sounds really good, actually.
Back here on Tommy John Show. So the Penn State Nittany Lions, and remember, we were here a month ago. And We were reacting to the college football rankings. The AP preseason poll came out, and they had Texas number one, Penn State number two. And Penn State rightfully had a lot of hype going into the year. They brought back Drew Aller. They brought back the two running backs. The defense was supposed to be ferocious, supposed to have the best offensive line in the country. Their schedule was a joke apart from the Ohio State and Oregon game, and then people didn't know what Indiana would be in 2025. So they had two tough games on the year. Even if they lose that, a 10-2 Penn State team that went to the semifinal last year is getting into the playoff. And Drew Aller was getting praise, so much so last year, that if they would have went to the national championship game, if they would have beaten Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl, there was talks of him declaring and being the number one pick in the draft. He was horrible in the game, decides to go back, which I think was the smart decision, and he has been awful. He played okay against UCLA, but UCLA, this is not the Ohio State Buckeyes, all right? This is UCLA. This is a team that had not led the entire year. This is a UCLA team that did not have a head football coach. They fired him, and they had the interim in there. Then they have a guy who, I'm trying to remember his name right now, calling plays for the first time ever. And he was forgetting to put his headset down. So the quarterback, Nico Imaileva, couldn't even hear him. Was it Neuheisel? Jerry Neuheisel. Yeah, and his dad used to be the head coach there. UCLA ran through his blood, wanted to be the play caller, finally is the play caller. They score 42. But can you believe it? UCLA were the biggest laughing stock in all of college football. New Mexico went into UCLA and hammered them. And Penn State, the Nittany Lions, James Franklin, all the hype, national championship expectations. After losing a close game to Oregon, follow it up with going on the road and getting their doors blown off against UCLA. You got to be kidding me. And I don't want to hear about Penn State anymore. I don't want to talk about James Franklin anymore. I said it on the program initially. How in the world is Penn State the number two team in the country when they don't beat any good team? They don't beat Notre Dame in the Rose Bowl. They don't beat Ohio State at home. They don't beat Michigan when they have a pulse. They don't win big games ever. And now they can't even beat UCLA. Now if they win out, they'll make the playoff. But are they really going to go into Ohio, into Columbus and beat Ohio State? Are they going to beat Indiana, who blew the doors off Illinois? Illinois is a million times better than UCLA. UCLA was the worst team in the Big Ten. So there's probably two more losses at least on this schedule. And they had so much hype going into the year. Oh my God, Penn State, Penn State, Penn State. They schedule three cupcakes, and the first time they play a good team, they lose. And then they play another Big Ten team, and they lose that one. And not to any Big Ten team, UCLA. Ridiculous. I don't want to talk about Penn State anymore. I don't want to talk about James Franklin anymore. They're done. And I've been wrong on some things. Penn State and James Franklin, I've been right every single time. Deaf, taxes, Penn State not winning a big game, and not being a national championship contender. Those are the three things that are certain in life. They are god-awful. And Texas, too. Arch Manning was horrendous. So the number one and number two teams in the preseason AP Top 25 are no longer ranked, which is unbelievable. It was a good week of college football. You had Miami going into Tallahassee, taking down Florida State. You had Alabama with a big win against Vanderbilt. You had Clemson just annihilating Belichick in North Carolina. Michigan with a big win against Wisconsin. Notre Dame won against Boise State. So there were some big results. But college football has been unbelievable this year. Unbelievable. The last minute on the show, we'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens. And they start their season this week against Toronto. Should be interesting. To me, this is all about how the second line is going to play. Because we know the first line, Slavkovsky, Suzuki, Caulfield, they're all proven first liners. Demidoff's going to be good. Line A should score some. But how is Kirby Doc going to play? That's the big question. If Kirby Doc is a number two center in the NHL, then the Canadiens are a very dangerous team. They brought in Dobson, have Lane Hudson. They should make the playoffs this year. but it's all about getting off to a good start. They can't start behind the eight ball, especially with teams like Tampa, like Toronto, like Florida. Ottawa's gotten better. They can't do that in the Atlantic. So that's our show for this week. Cannot wait to talk about the NHL starting up, week six of the National Football League, and more big games in college football. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show, and thank you so much for listening.